Hey everyone, this is our episode for Thursday, April 23rd, 2020. The response to COVID-19 has varied across the country and across the globe. By now, the especially devastating toll on Black Americans has been well documented, with death rates disturbingly and disproportionately higher than white Americans. The city of St. Louis made national headlines when its first 12 recorded deaths from COVID-19 were African Americans. And the peak of the first wave of cases is expected to hit around the same day this episode is being released. We wanted to better understand how the outbreak is touching the lives of Black St. Louisans. So on this episode, a doctor, a mayor, and a nurse share their stories about how COVID-19 is affecting Black residents in the St. Louis region and how they're working to make sure everyone in our town can stand a chance against the deadly virus.
How have we utilized resources to ensure that there is inclusion of all communities?
How can we take immediate actions to keep them safe and keep them alive?
We didn't have anything prepared for people at all, and especially in communities that were most vulnerable to getting the disease and dying from it.
I'm Jalian Yang, and from St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here. Dr. Will Ross is an African-American nephrologist, professor at Washington University in St. Louis's School of Medicine, and chairman of the St. Louis City Department of Health. You might remember him from our last season, when we interviewed him for an episode called At the Table and Dismissed. And with COVID-19 spreading fast, Dr. Ross says it's especially important to ask some crucial questions about disturbing and sadly familiar patterns in how resources are distributed.
Which communities are most vulnerable for COVID, and how have we utilized resources to ensure that there is inclusion of all communities? That question really should be hardwired into everything that we do. But if not, then someone has to raise their hand and say, well, where's our equity lens? I mean, are we sure that everyone is being included, and are we directing resources commensurate with need across the region?
As cases started rising in other parts of the country, Dr. Ross wanted to be prepared for what might be coming. He started looking at data from other cities where the case count was rising more quickly than St. Louis.
We certainly know that African Americans are more likely to have high blood pressure, diabetes, kidney disease, heart disease, asthma. These are all risk factors for COVID-19. We know that those risk factors are also elevated in our Latino, Latinx population. So we have to be equally cognizant of that. And so I had to conclude this, I can't imagine this would not be the case here in St. Louis, that there would be a significant number of cases in North St. Louis that simply are undocumented.
The residents of North St. Louis City, which Dr. Ross is referring to, are predominantly Black.
When I was looking at potential hotspots in St. Louis, they were actually blank spots because we didn't have the testing. I became alarmed, and that led me to write the editorial that was for the St. Louis American about the need for COVID test sites in North City because it was so underserved.
Eventually, two testing sites opened earlier this month in Carr Square and Wells Goodfellow. Both are predominantly Black neighborhoods in North St. Louis City, a part of the region that Dr. Ross is especially concerned about. Dr. Ross says a clear communication strategy is needed to ensure African American residents receive up-to-date information about how to keep themselves safe during the outbreak.
We need boots on the ground. We need, and we're doing this. We're using community health workers to spread this information, particularly in these neighborhoods that are under-resourced. We're developing a regional collaborative response so that we begin to get true information on the ground about who's at risk, what are the complications, what are the early symptoms of the COVID infection, what are the complication rates, and where can people go to get testing, and how do we follow up? So we were able to get that task force pretty much charged and deployed, and they are doing gangbusters. They really are getting the word out.
And he's encouraged by the level of coordination and collaboration he's seeing in the broader healthcare community. He says a unified effort is not only what we need to help the region recover, but is also what we need to address racial inequities in healthcare for the long term.
It really is just refreshing, it's reassuring that our hospital leaders recognize that this is one system, that is one region, and that they have to share resources and share communication and really talk to this this threat as one hospital network. We have a lot of resources, a lot of intellectual capital, a lot of public health capital, a lot of concern, health officials. And I want us to be an example of what a city can do when everyone comes together. All the elected officials, public health officials, academicians, civic leaders, grassroots organizations, when we all come together as one St. Louis under this threat, we can address this, we can mitigate this, and we can overcome this. That is what compels me to keep my feet on the accelerator throughout this pandemic.
Up next, we hear from a small town mayor about what community outreach looks like in the midst of a pandemic. And a registered nurse explains how structural racism impacts outcomes during the outbreak. If you tuned into our last season about municipal divides, you might remember Mayor James McGee of Vineta Park from our episode From the Ground Up. He's part of the 24-1 community, an effort by 24 small municipalities in North St. Louis County to share resources and improve outcomes in their school district. Quick point of clarification for our out-of-town listeners, North St. Louis County is a different part of the region than North St. Louis City, which Dr. Ross mentioned earlier. And when Mayor McGee and the rest of the small town mayors in the 24-1 footprint heard about COVID-19, they sprang into action.
How can we take immediate actions to keep them safe and keep them alive? 24-1 started having meetings, and then we started having phone calls. I'm reaching out to the county executive and also the governor.
They felt a sense of urgency, not because the virus targets people based on race, but because of historical patterns of disinvestment in Black communities. In late March, they were able to get one testing site placed at the Delwood Recreation Center, which is run by one of the municipalities in the 24-1 footprint. But due to an overwhelming amount of calls, the opening of the testing site was postponed. Meanwhile, Mayor McGee and the other mayors took matters into their own hands and began reaching out to residents.
Let our people know that this is serious. This is nothing to play with. Because if you get this disease, you're going to know that you have it from the pains and all of the stress and stuff that you're going to go through. And it's not worth it.
Starting with older adults, they sent out surveys to their residents to assess what they knew about the virus, share resources, and give a number to call with any questions. And they put boots on the ground to educate young people about the impact of the virus.
And we found out that the young people didn't understand that. They were playing basketball. So what we did, that group, we got together with them and let them know how serious this were. And this is why we got to shut the basketball court down, got to shut the tennis court down, the playground down, because we put it in their ball court. What if you take this back home to your grandmother, your mother, and they pass away? How would you feel? We made it sort of personal.
There are now four testing sites in North St. Louis County after sites were first established in other predominantly white areas of the county, and cases continue to climb to the point that North St. Louis County has the highest concentration of cases in St. Louis County. But Mayor McGee is keeping busy, engaging residents and making sure they have the information and resources they need to slow the spread.
It was a sort of like a slow process at first, but now we just picked up steam. And now everybody that want tests, they go up there to Delwood in North County. And we're looking at a central location for those residents in central North St. Louis. We still have to keep the same approach until it's eliminated or they have a cure for it. Because if we don't, and we have to make sure that this is gone. And then once it's gone, then we start slowly getting back to our regular routine.
Thank you. Our final conversation is with Brittany Farrell, an organizer and a nurse who is pursuing a Master of Public Health at Washington University in St. Louis. And she was immediately skeptical that healthcare services, such as testing sites, would be available to Black communities.
It was just done in a way that just felt so like they just really didn't care, as if they didn't think that Black folks were susceptible, if not more, to contracting the virus. So that's, you know, that's the start, is like the lack of preparedness, that we didn't have anything prepared for people at all, and especially in communities that were most vulnerable to getting the disease and dying from it.
She reminds us that establishing testing sites in Black neighborhoods is just one step toward ensuring equitable health access, and that it's important to be thoughtful and creative about how to ensure that people have the resources to take advantage of those healthcare services.
They can put a testing center in North City, right? But depending on where it is in North City, where a large percentage of the people don't have cars to even be able to access it, what does it look like? Does it look like more mobile clinics? I know Affinia has a mobile clinic right now, and I think that we want to begin to think about how do we make sure that people have access to detect whether or not they are infected early, to be more proactive around the measures to protect them and their families.
Across the nation, race-based data on the impact of COVID-19 is beginning to emerge, but cities like St. Louis are only now beginning to collect and share it.
Without the data, we can't see the disparities in the testing, the infection, the death rates, and we can't see the racist policies that, you know, create what we're currently dealing with, where there's a disproportionate number of Black folks that are dying. I know, like here in St. Louis, this city, the whole metro area is still confronting the legacy of past racist policies and practices, right? And so I think having data that's aggregated by race would really be able to show like how those racist policies are still impacting and killing Black folks today. We cannot even begin to address or even eliminate those policies without understanding how the disease and the infection and the death rates look by race. You know, when you think about it, you know, who's most incarcerated in this country? You know, it's largely Black people and brown folks, and we're going to see another huge disparity there. And so it's like the types of policies and practices around mass incarceration, the types of policies and practices around housing, lack of access to healthcare, it starts there. So I believe it is just an act of irresponsibility and injustice to try to frame this as if this is a new thing. And when it comes to Black women and our vulnerability to disease and death, I always think about the weathering hypothesis, you know, and the allostatic load that Black women have in comparison to everyone else, where, you know, not only do we have our own experiences from being Black, but being at the intersection of being a woman as well. It further complicates our lived experience and contributes to the amount of stress and trauma they may experience that deteriorates our overall health.
She adds that Black women also have a higher rate of dying during and after childbirth, which means that policies that prohibit family members, doulas, midwives, or other advocates from accompanying patients may also lead to deadly consequences for Black women and the babies they carry. And with national rhetoric propping up the unsupported claim that hydroxychloroquine can cure or treat COVID-19, Black women, again, are at risk.
It has led to the drug being out of stock for many of people who need it. And when it comes to lupus, that is autoimmune disease that disproportionately impacts Black women. So for the medication that Black women need to be able to manage their autoimmune disease being out of stock, that means that Black women aren't going to have the things that they need to take care of themselves. And you have doctors who are writing themselves and their friends prescriptions so that they can have this medication when there are communities of people who need this medicine. And it is, it's an injustice that I feel is going to weigh heavily on the shoulders of Black women. I think that when you talk about the impact that COVID-19 is having on Black people, as if it just started, you know, within the past few months, it's a disservice to the work that needs to be done so that when we get on the other side of this pandemic, we are not putting ourselves in a position to have to experience the same thing in the event that we're faced with another event like this, which I'm sure we will be. It's a failure to recognize like the underlying cause of why we're here. And I feel like the people who are framing this as if it's a new disparity, they are oftentimes in the positions where they could make changes, they could enact policies that could transform the lived experiences and the accessibility of resources for Black people, but they don't, you know, and that's the same fight that people, public health people, people who are fighting for economic justice for Black folks, we have been faced with for the longest time, is people not wanting to recognize the underlying cause for a lot of the conditions that Black folks live in.
We asked Brittany what she would have changed if she could.
It always goes back to the quality of Black people's lives and health prior to this. You know, like if I could wave any magic wand, it would be to have Black people to be in a different position than we were in, than the majority of Black folks were in prior to this, right? That would largely change what we're dealing with now and what the disparity looks like in this particular moment.
But there is no magic wand, and this moment is a crucial one in which the decision to learn from our past or ignore it will have consequences for years to come.
I feel if this city is ever going to make any type of significant progress, if we're ever going to actually reckon with our past, we have to make sure that we are studying things through a lens of race, because it's such a huge disparity in the city in regards to healthcare and race. I think there needs to be a robust public health campaign or like education that educates folks on what is available to them, what services are available to them so that they are able to continue to keep themselves healthy. And I also believe that, and I saw that there is it's called Prepare STL, where they are actually going out and their goal is to educate Black communities on their vulnerabilities and increased risk for infection of COVID-19. We need more of that across the metro, across the state, really, where people who don't understand what they're at risk for, there are resources provided to them that are accessible.
And the very thing that's keeping her motivated during this time is school, obtaining her degree and gaining the skills to continue putting a more critical racial and economic equity lens on the field of public health.
And of course, right now, where we do a lot of statistical testing, and, you know, I've come to just deeply value that skill set, because it helps in moments like this where we need to track the spread of disease, or, you know, we need to track racial health disparities. I mean, I've always known that type of work to be valuable, but it just feels much more personal to me now. And I'm just thankful. I have so much gratitude for being able to still work and to feel deeply connected to my work, because I know that it is, you know, for the betterment of Black people.
This show is produced by me, Jalian Yang, and my co-producer, Lauren Brown. This show is overseen by Tim Lloyd, senior producer of On Demand and Content Partnerships, and Robert Peterson, director of radio programming and operations at St. Louis Public Radio. From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.